Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Happy fall!
Here's John Williams.
It really is a lovely time of year. Our friend Mary Schmeek, the Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist at the Tribune, said, let's embrace the fact we have four vigorous seasons in Chicago. I'm going to miss summer, too, and warm weather and warm water, but I like fall, too. I'm going to try that like I really mean it now. I like fall, too. I really do. My birthday's right around the corner. Who doesn't love fall? But when you feel like you were cheated out of 3 full months of summer, it's sort of hard to embrace what follows fall, and that's where we are today, September 21st. So, September 23rd. Is today, correct? What's today's
date? That's correct.
Do we have that information? Has it been made public?
It's the 23rd.
Today is, Bruce Springsteen's 70th birthday.
Wow.
I follow Mark Baser from The Interview Show on the internet and on Twitter, and he tweeted out, in honor of Bruce's 70th birthday, here are my top five of his songs. This is Mark Baser's top five Bruce Springsteen songs. Backstreets, The Promise, Bobby Jean, Born to Run, For You, Atlantic City, The Promised Land, Prove It All Night, Restless Nights, The River, Dancing in the Dark, Jackson Cage, and Youngstown. Those are his top five.
Wait, what?
We get your point, Mark. We get your point.
Didn't we have this talk before, John, that you and I are like not huge Bruce fans?
I don't even know those songs.
Make that three of us.
Okay, yeah. I was going to say.
But we're outliers, I think, on that, you guys, especially in a WGN radio audience. I know there's a lot of Springsteen fans out there, so you all know. And you know if you're like Mark Baser. Well, it's hard to pick five. It's hard for me to name five. But I'm not a hater. And hey, I'm here for you. I'm trying to say happy fall, happy birthday to Bruce Springsteen. Today's a big day, of course, in Chicago because every Cubs game is critical, every White Sox game is fun, and the Bears have never faced a more important third game of a season. I said that about the second game of the season. Boy, is this an important game, too.
It's a must-win.
It kind of is. Well, it's only a 16-game season, so really I think that's one of the reasons that America just loses itself about NFL games is because we love the violence, the speed, the athleticism, but also because there's a sense of urgency starting day one. And then it was such a terrible. We are averaging, 9.5 points a game. Not good.
It's ugly, and now everyone else in our division has won for the week.
Packers look good yesterday.
Yeah, they look good. So did
Vikings.
Oh, my God, they killed.
Minnesota just scores left and right. So I'm thinking, okay, we're playing Washington. And by the way, what do we call the Washington football team? I thought we had already had that conversation and decided. But everywhere I go, people are saying or printing Redskins, so I don't like that word anymore, but there it is. So we're playing the Washington National Football League team this evening. Sam Panionovich follows sports, of course, and he follows the line on sports as much as anybody I know. He's been doing sports for us Saturday mornings, not of late, though, but we like to reach out to his expertise. Hi, Sam P., how are you?
King John, happy Monday. What date is it? I'm so confused.
I don't know.
September what?
I don't know.
Okay. All right.
What's the line on the game today? And what does that even mean?
So it's bounced around quite a bit. This opened up in Vegas. Chicago is a 4-point favorite against the Washington football team. That's what I call them, at least. And then it moved to 4.5. It moved to 5, 5.5. Got as high as 6. Then it started to go the other way. So people started to bet on the Redskins. Went back to 5, went back to 4. And then late last night, some more money came in on Chicago. So the Bears are favored by 5.5 points right now in Las Vegas. So Vegas says, all right, Chicago's about 5.5 points better. So you can either lay the 5.5 or you can take the 5.5. And the point total is what I'm interested in. And that total is 41, which means that's the combined point total expected by the Cats at Vegas. So that's your combined points between the two teams. I read one publication in Chicago. I won't name names, but there were 10 predictions. And 9 of them were under 41. I saw 1 point prediction was 7-3. One was 10-6. One was 5-2. People are starting to jump on this under train. As you know, I've been on your show the last 2 weeks, and we've been on the under. But if there's one thing that Washington does well, it's give up a lot of yards, a lot of big plays, and a lot of points. They've given up 63 points in two games. So if you're Mitch Trubisky in this Bears offense with an extra day to prepare, to add some new wrinkles in, to find some rhythm, actually, this is the team you can score against, and this is the team you should score points against.
Here's a play I hope they've added to their offensive arsenal, the one where they give it to one of our guys and he runs it real far.
How about the one where the quarterback actually finds the open receiver and delivers a throw on target? That'd be ideal as well. I said this the other day on one of the stations, one of the TV stations. I said, look, when I was a kid, I was sick and I had to go home from school. When I got home from school, my mom would give me medicine because medicine makes you feel better. This is maybe the best medicine the Chicago Bears offense can get coming into this this week. Is
playing Washington
defense. They're so bad. And if you can't put up points on this defense, something's certainly broken. Let's put it that way.
If the team doesn't do well tonight, what will the conclusion be? That Trubisky is that bad, or that the coaching staff was that ill-informed about what they had on the field?
I think it's a combination of the two, but you could also point the finger at Ryan Pace, general manager, who decided that Mitchell Trubisky, I don't care that he traded up a pick to get Trubisky. You know, he went from 3-2 to get the quarterback. But, man, I don't know how much you've seen of this Patrick Mahomes kid for the Chiefs, the MVP from last year. He made a throw yesterday off 1 foot at his own 30-yard line, and it landed perfectly in the corner of the end zone. John, that's like a 70-yard throw off 1 foot, and it landed right in the receiver's hands on the run. Beautiful play. Every time I watch him play, I think, oh, God. And then you watch Deshaun Watson yesterday. I think he had 3 touchdowns, no picks. Those are the two quarterbacks that went later in the draft. Now, hindsight is 20/20, and I'm not saying that I would have taken Mahomes or I would have taken Watson, but this is a league that is judged on your whiffs and your hits. And right now, of the three quarterbacks that went in the top 15 picks, Trubisky's the worst. Now there's time to get better. There's time to grow. And I get that he didn't play in the preseason. He didn't throw a ball in August. And, you know, he was a little rusty and the offensive line hasn't been good. But we can't start making excuses when the organization traded 2 first-round picks to get Khalil Mack, which means the window to win a championship is open now, right? You can't be trying to hold a quarterback's hand while while you have a defense.
We haven't lost the game. We didn't lose tonight yet. I mean, for all you know, we're going to win out. We're going to win a lot of games or be in the stuff at the end there.
No, but yeah, but the narrative, if you follow some of the narratives around town, you know, before the season, we were a Super Bowl contender. And by we, I mean Chicago Bears. I'm not a Chicago Bear. But the Chicago Bears were a Super Bowl contender. And then after they lost to the Packers, it was, uh-oh, they might not win 7 games. It's somewhere in the middle. I mean, you and I talked about this before the season. I think they're a 9 or a 10-win team. But you look at the division, and I just heard you and your crew talking about this. Yeah, the Packers are 3-0. The Vikings look really good. They're 2-1. Hey, by the way, the Detroit Lions don't have a loss. They're 2-0-1. So you don't have time to stumble early. This division is much better. Last year, Aaron Rodgers was hurt. The Vikings were decimated by injuries. And the Lions were awful behind a rookie head coach. Every other team in that division is better this year, so you have to come to play every single game. There are no games off.
Our city so needs a good sports team. You know, a successful sports team. The Bulls won't be that this year. We'll see how good the Blackhawks are going to be. The White Sox obviously won't win half their games. The Cubs are probably going to miss the playoffs. Northwestern lost to Michigan State at home over the weekend. We want a team to do well, and I don't want to have to wait until next summer for that. So I don't really. I'm not even a big sports fan. I'm not even a big Bears guy. But I'd like to have, you know, a little happy juju come through my town. Well, between now and January something.
Yeah, definitely. I think the Blackhawks, to be perfectly honest, I think the Blackhawks are going to have a much better season this year. They should be a playoff team. And in the NHL, when you get in the playoffs, you have a shot, especially when you have Taves and Kane and Keith and Seabrook and guys like that, and Corey Crawford if he's healthy. But, man, did that not feel like a funeral over the weekend at Wrigley for the Cubs? I mean, you lose 4 straight games to the Cardinals, and they're all by 1 run. 6 losses in a row, they're cooked. They're 4 games back in the wild card with 6 to go. They're done. It's over. I'm realistic about that. But I think the Blackhawks will be fine. But let's not – look, the Bears win this game. Schedule starts to open up. I'm looking at everything here. They can still win 9 or 10 games. They can still be a playoff team. The division title, I don't know. But
his defense is still, I think, one of the best in the entire league.
Have you heard anything about Pinheiro's leg? Is he going to be able to? He's so important to us, it seems, right now. Is he going to be able to kick well?
Oh, he'll be fine. The only kicker that's better than him is that kicker, John Williams, back when he was at Joliet College, right? Was it Joliet Junior College?
Joliet Junior College, the Wolves. We are ranked number one in the nation. I was the field goal kicker. We don't need to talk about that, Sam.
Didn't they call you the Golden Toe?
One time, oh, I don't even mean to tell you the stories, but they're legend. One last thing about the Cubs, then I'll let you go. Sam Panionovich, but if the Cubs fail to make the playoffs, I just wonder if it's not fair, if it's unfair to blame Joe Maddon, because he didn't break Javi Baez's hand. He didn't get the high sprain in Rizzo's leg. Think of all of the injuries to all of the marquee players, to say nothing of the fact that one of our most important players took half of the season off, and the other one, they gave him half the season off. I mean, Addison Russell, just go through the list of people that are important to this club, and they all were injured at the worst possible times.
Everything that could have went wrong this year went wrong. Sort of like in 2016 when they won the World Series, everything that could have went right, timely hitting. Clutch pitching at the end. Everything went right in 2016. I felt like everything that could have went wrong in 2019 went wrong. And is it Joe Maddon's fault entirely? No. But there's always a fall guy, right? And it's not Theo's not going to fire himself. Theo's not going to fire Jed. Theo's not going to fire the players.
Is he going to fire Joe? Is he going to fire the manager?
It's not even firing the manager because the contract's up. I keep saying fire. He's not going to re-sign Joe Maddon, because he's a lame duck manager. And by that, I mean this is the last year of his contract.
All right, that's going to be my news click then at WGNRadio.com, our daily web poll question. Will be, should the Cubs sign, is this the right question, Sam?
Should they re-sign him? Yeah, should they re-sign Joe? Would you re-sign Joe Maddon, yes or no? And I have a feeling it's going to be a resounding amount of no's.
What would you say?
I don't know who you're going to get this better than him, but people want change. When things aren't going well, people want to change. And he's certainly going to be the guy to take the ball.
All right, Sam, so I'm going to let you go. The numbers tonight are 41 points total scored. You are going to take the over or under on that?
Yeah, I'm going to go over. I'm going to say about 31-17. I think the Bears win handily. If you don't win handily, we're talking about potentially making a change at quarterback. You got to take care of business tonight against a bad team.
All right, Sam, I'll talk to you next week. It's always a pleasure to get your expertise on this stuff, my friend.
All right, King. See you later.
So I thought we all liked the idea of, sure worked for the Oscars where you don't have a host. A great host is great, but it just seems to be more and more difficult to do and harder to find a person willing to do it. Heaven forbid you do it and it doesn't go well. Who needs that? And the pressure. So they didn't do it in the Oscars and it went pretty swell. So the Emmys are doing that now, too. And they opened with a cartoon of Homer Simpson that then cut to some shtick backstage, where then they pushed somebody out to do some announcing, and the whole thing was clunky. Right?
I agree, but I also love that, what's his name from Breaking Bad, did go out there and kind of start the show.
Right.
He is amazing. He's so hard to hate that if someone is going to lead the way, why not him?
Why not have him lead the charge? But then they have, so is this, I don't know who Thomas Lennon is. Is that the guy who's making the sort of snarky observations about people as they're going up to the podium? Do you
guys
know
he's one of those guys that's always kind of a smaller character in movies.
Ah.
Okay. He was in
Elf?
I Love You, Man. Yeah, he was.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see, what else was he in? He's been in a lot of the movies with, like, Paul Rudd and those guys.
Okay, so then what do you think about this observation early in the show last night?
The producers have asked me to give a special shout-out to any of our previous lead actress winners who are watching tonight from prison. Hopefully those 2 weeks are going to fly right by.
Hopefully those 2 weeks are going to fly right by. 50-50 says the internet on how funny or neat necessary that was.
Well, my hearing isn't great, but it was very difficult to hear what he was saying anyway.
The acoustics of that auditorium and the microphoning, the miking of the audience was bizarre. It was really off-putting last night. The Kardashians came up. It was Kim and Kendall. They're splendid-looking representatives of the species, if you ask me.
Yeah, they paid for it. I hope so.
Kim's just beautiful. Kendall kind of looked like a spider, though. There was something about Kendall. She's long and lean, and she was in that clingy, long dress. And I thought, I have never seen anything like that. It was really a special and extraordinary look.
Got a thumbs down from me.
So they come up and they say this.
Our family knows firsthand how truly compelling television comes from real people just being themselves.
Telling their stories unfiltered and unscripted.
Here are the nominees.
So you see, then they go on doing the nominees for competition shows. Did you hear what I heard?
The laughter. Because, yeah, it's kind of awkward. I don't know if they really were trying to be serious or not.
They were trying to be serious. They were trying
they
to be serious.
They can't be that there, dumb,
no,
right?
There was no double take. There was no comedic pause. There was no eye roll. They didn't play that for a laugh. I think they thought, or whoever wrote that, thought it would work to have them pitch themselves as people who are just putting it out there as real people, and now we're going to award real people on competition shows. That was bizarre. And so just play clip two of the Kardashians one more time, producer Olive. Clip two.
Real people just being themselves.
Telling their stories unfiltered and unscripted.
Oh, God, that's hurt. That hurts.
I think everyone knew it was a joke, but the two women reading the card.
Oh, you know what? Maybe that's it, huh?
Right. It was meant to be a joke, but they don't agree with it.
Hey, girls, just so you know, when you say that, pause, because everybody's going to laugh
at you. They didn't get that memo. Alex Borstein's speech was remarkable, and I've been Googling it today to see if I could find a larger version of this story or to see if it's even true. I mean, I'm sure it's true, but how true was what she said? If you missed that, listen to an amazing 30 seconds.
John, I just speak the truth. I try to be honest, and I know it's not popular. I just want us to be better, John Williams. That's all I'm doing over here.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Carmen from WGN, formerly of WGN Radio.
Oh, my gosh. Carmen!
And you know, John, when you walk around New York, you get to a corner, and there's this thing called a bodega, and you walk in, and they make you an egg and cheese or a turkey sandwich, and it's delicious, and it costs like $5-6. And then you can walk down the street and, oh, there's a slice of pizza for 99 cents. We just need to be better. That's all I'm saying.
Where do you hail from?
Hail from here, Jen.
Okay. Just making sure.
Well, it doesn't sound like it.
Well, you see, that's the thing. Like, we can just defend that we're the best, and I love Chicago, but New York just does things better, and we should try to top them. We could be better, but for whatever reason. You ever ride the L around here? Try it in the loop.
People are passing.
I don't know what got into Mark Carmen. He called in the other day. We were talking about something else, and the next thing you know, he was singing the praises of the street food scene in New York. Said it's better than the street food scene in Chicago, and he did not get an argument from me, and largely you. Like, we love our food. We love our pizza. We're fine here for food. Street food, not so much. And he thinks that's one of the things that makes New York better. Point well taken, Mark. I don't know why we got to that, but I hear what you're saying. We were talking about the Washington Redskins playing the Bears tonight. I was marveling, maybe late to the game, that they're still called the Redskins. In this day and age, 815 texted in and said, hey, King John, what's Manuka Community High School's nickname and logo? They're the Manuka Indians. Don't ask me to make sense of where the line is drawn. Warriors, Redskins, Indians, Injuns. The list goes on, but it's still okay to be the Indians. John, get over it. They're the Redskins. Well, I guess they are. John, the Emmy voters, now we're back on that, was great for giving 4 Emmys to Fleabag versus Veep. Somebody else texted in and said Peter Dinklage was great. He is great. He was great in everything he's done. He's been funny to me. When he's in funny movies, he's funny. And he's willing to trade on his height, but it was not a major part of Game of Thrones character, you know, once in a while. But the guy's just a good actor. He's a great actor.
Have you watched Fleabag?
Yeah. I think that's a good show. Do you?
No, I think it's a great show.
Yeah, it's a really good show. It's just sort of like The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. You know, really bright, strident, funny women that we're not used to.
Isn't it kind of a dark comedy?
Yes.
Okay. I was going to say, I recall you bringing this up when the nominations came out and you were praising Fleabag. I had not seen it yet. I had heard good things.
A lot of people went and watched it then and were mad at me because they didn't like it so much. Mm. The language is bad. The situations are coarse. She's a sex addict. Hello?
I don't know if she's a sex addict. But
they were describing her as that in some of the rundowns, and that wasn't the way I would always put it. John, when will the Emmys be on a streaming network? Ironically, no network shows are ever nominated. That'd be something, right? If the Emmys were on Amazon or Hulu or Netflix or something like that. Where were we, producer? Well, if we were just going to play a clip from, oh, yeah, Alex Borstein's speech from The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which is another really good, funny show. The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel's co-star wins an Emmy last night, and here's part of her speech.
I want to dedicate this to the strength of a woman, to my mother, where are you when you come? To my grandmother, Naji, they are immigrants. They are Holocaust survivors. My grandmother turned to a guard. She was in line to be shot into a pit, and she said, what happens if I step out of line? And he said, I don't have the heart to shoot you, but somebody will. And she stepped out of line, and for that I am here, and for that my children are here. So step out of line, ladies. Step out of line.
Step out of line, humanity. So I've been Googling that speech, and I get the speech, but I don't hear the backstory. I don't know if she's told that story. If you have a link to an article that fleshes that story out, send it to me. Tell me where to find it, because I want to know more about that, and that's the first I've ever heard of that. And in all of my searches, it just mentions that and people reacting to that, but nobody said, oh, yeah, she told that to Vanity Fair last year, and here's the story.
That's the first I heard, and to hear that she's from Deerfield.
You know who else surprised me? I didn't hear that she was from Deerfield. Was Southern Illinois University.
Oh, you're talking about the guy from Better Call Saul.
Yeah, he's a Saluki, as am I. I'm like, holy cow. And I don't know what our ages are. I think I'm a little older than him, but not a lot. You know, the great acting schools of Illinois are Illinois State University, Northwestern, pick 'em. I didn't know. I don't know that Southern is known for its actors. It's known for a lot of things. He sort of fits Bob Odenkirk.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
He sort of fits the attitude that I think a lot of people have about Carbondale, and that's the sort of I'll go to college. I'll be fine. That's him. That was me. That was us. That's your Salukis, and he's a grad from there. Go Salukis. So props to him. But if anybody knows more about that story. From Alex Borstein, I'd like to hear it because that's the first time I have ever heard that. All right, where are we? It's 1:46. Let's pause here and then go to the... I'm just sort of taking care of a lot of business today, isn't it? This isn't a typical show. After 2 o'clock, I want to talk about the sports wagering in Indiana and how well that's going and how much money it is siphoning off from Chicago and Illinois. Did you bet this weekend? Did you go to Indiana? Did you place a bet? We're going to talk a little bit about that. Tipping in Chicago could change, too, this way. If your waitress, do you know what your waitress is getting paid? What's your guess of what a lot of the waitresses, there's a variety of factors, but it's $6.40 an hour. $6.40 an hour. Not $2.30, but not $15 either. The city council in Chicago is considering saying, okay, we're going to make sure they all get $15 an hour. It'll make sure they can budget. They'll know they're going to get a decent wage. What would that do to your tip? And what will that do to the employees? Maybe some of them are going to lose their jobs if the boss has to pay them $15 an hour. But, of course, the Chicago City Council's considering going down that path. We talk about that in the next hour, too. Let's mention Greta Thunberg. She's that 16-year-old Swedish environmental activist. And I heard she was coming to the United States. She sailed by herself across the Atlantic, and I thought that was kind of a stunt, and I don't know that I especially want to hear what a 16-year-old has to tell me about climate change. But she's pretty good. In August of 2018, she was 15 years old. She was demonstrating outside her school, or she took a day off from school to demonstrate at the Swedish Parliament. She held up signs calling for stronger climate action. Soon, other students engaged in similar protests. They called it Fridays for Future, the protest for climate over there. In 2018, she addressed the United Nations Climate Change Conference. In May of this year, she was featured on the cover of Time magazine. Vice did a 30-minute documentary about her titled Make the World Greta Again. Again, her name is Greta Thunberg, 16-year-old Swedish activist. There's now a thing called the Greta Thunberg effect. In late 2018, Thunberg began the school climate strikes and public speeches by which he has become internationally recognized as a climate activist. Later this summer, August of 2019, she sailed across the Atlantic from Plymouth, UK to New York in a 60-foot racing yacht equipped with solar panels and underwater turbines. She spoke to the United Nations today. This is part of what she had to say.
This is all wrong. I shouldn't be up here. I should be back in school on the other side of the ocean. Yet you all come to us young people for hope. How dare you? You have stolen my dreams and my childhood with your empty words. And yet I'm one of the lucky ones. People are suffering. People are dying. Entire ecosystems are collapsing. We are in the beginning of a mass extinction, and all you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. How dare you? For more than 30 years, the science has been crystal clear. How dare you continue to look away?
On she went. I hope she wrote that speech because it's pretty good. Fairy tales of eternal economic growth. That's pretty sage for a 16-year-old. And I, you know, think the drama both works for and against her. But, you know, it worked for Malala. I mean, Malala's story was even more personal. And when Malala spoke, I was a believer. I thought, this is the most remarkable young lady I've ever seen. You remember Malala's speech.
I want education for the sons and daughters of the Taliban and all the terrorists and extremists. I do not even hate the Talib who shot me. Even if there is a gun in my hand and he stands in front of me, I would not shoot him. This is the compassion that I have learned from Muhammad, the Prophet of Mercy, and Jesus Christ, and Lord Buddha.
And on she went. It's 1:57. Let's pause here. We'll head into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom at the top of the hour, get you the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Steve Bertrand will have that. I want to talk about wagering in Indiana and how much Illinois is losing because we don't have it. Maybe we should. I have this question about this whole Ukraine story, too, and it's a real simple one. I'm not going to dive too deep into all of the details. I don't know them. You don't either. But I want to know if what the president is being accused of is against the law. Does the Constitution say something about that? Dave Schultz is always terrific, a constitutional law professor. And I think what he says will surprise you.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
All day long.
Here's John Williams.
Hi. 206 and a half in our studio, over my shoulder, blue skies, puffy clouds. Welcome, Autumn. Welcome to the show. We're here weekdays 1 to 3, Saturdays 10 to noon. We're preempted this Saturday, Northwestern football. We got those games, too, Saturdays on WGN. And, of course, the award-winning Mincing Rascals podcast, judged best in the state by the Illinois Broadcasters Association. Dropped another one on you Thursday at 5. Did you grab that one? Missed you, Steve Bertrand.
Yeah, I didn't think the last couple have been that good, frankly.
Steve's usually in the mix, but no, he had to go to Europe. Pal around with some swells in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
1 to 10, your trip was
10. I mean, you know, really, it was great. It was really good. No. I hate it when you nitpick on little, you know, everything was overwhelmingly good. I always find the negative part and makes it sound like it wasn't that good. But
well, I do that too. And then you kind of do a reset because I think those things sort of You're trying to have fun. You're on vacation. And then these little nits just you want to pick at. And then when you step back, you go, yeah, but the other 23 hours were pretty good that day.
Right. You're the worst with one of my trips. You come back, I think it's a disaster.
The last trip I went on
made me feel
fantastic.
Terrible.
Oh, my God, did we love London. Took the fast train to Scotland, courtesy of Steve Bertrand Travels. And then you said, how did it go? And I told you. And this is a direct quote. You said, is Brenda there?
Well, but to
can
be
I
honest,
talk to Brenda, please?
There were some things on that trip we could have done differently, but yeah, there always are.
Live and learn and make the next one better. Sounds like you did. By the way, Lauren Lapka, we were talking about New York City street food scene versus Chicago street food scene. Texter said, John, they have garbage in New York because there aren't alleys. Another one said, New York has a lot of garbage because they have no alleys.
Oh, I'm sure that also plays a huge part.
The hot dog wrappers, yeah. We could put garbage cans out there and throw away our wrappers.
We were driving around Chicago a lot this weekend in the area, and our city's beautiful. Our city is beautiful. The flowers, the planters, just Brenda can't help. Every time we go by a hotel or up and down Michigan Avenue and the median or boulevard in between is so well planted and maintained. And Brenda's just effusive. Oh, look at those flowers. They're gorgeous. She really derives a lot of happiness out of that. I don't think they used to sort of, I don't know, mock or belittle Mayor Daley's attention to those sorts of things. I think Rahm kept it up, too. And I don't think that's a small thing. You go to other cities. You go to the Eiffel Tower. This came up in the Mincing Rascals recently when we were talking about, Steve, you weren't here for this, but we were talking about should groups be able to do religious solicitation by the Bean at Millennium Park. And one of our colleagues in the Mincing Rascals said, you know, a lot of big cities have that. It's kind of the urban thing. He said, let's not try and turn Chicago into the suburbs. He said, if you go to the Eiffel Tower, if you go to Tivoli Square, places like that, there's a lot of that action. And I'm thinking, if you go to the Eiffel Tower, as wonderful as it is, it's dirty around there. It's not well-maintained or manicured like we're used to landmark destinations in the United States being. And Chicago, I think, is as good, pretty, and well-maintained as pretty much any city in the world. I mean, I don't think that's an overstatement. You've traveled more than I have, Steve.
I don't think that
the cities in Europe, they've got things we don't have, like thousands of years of history. I mean, we can't fix that.
No.
But doggone it, I think our parks are better maintained and our pots are well planted, and that has a lot to do with the enjoyment people get out of a city.
Chicago is a beautiful place.
Yeah. John, I was at a casino yesterday in East Chicago, Indiana. About 30 minutes before kickoff, they had to have 50 people in line to make a wager. A couple of people reached out to me this weekend and said, oh my God, the amount of money and people crossing the border before an NFL game now that you can bet on sports in Indiana is amazing.
Yeah, I talked to one of the legislators pushing the Illinois gaming law through. And he said this over and over and over again. He said, there's a race here, and we're going to lose the race. And Indiana won the race.
So Chicago and Illinois said, okay, we got a plan. Here's the way it works. You can bet on sports. We really want you to bet on sports. We're going to keep all of the money. Whatever the casinos make, we will take pretty much all of it. And so we don't have sports betting in Chicago now because of that. They haven't figured it out.
Well, but no, we will. I think the law begins next year, John. This isn't the same as the Chicago casino. This is a separate...
Oh, pardon me.
Yeah, so no, we will have sports betting coming up. It just isn't going to start until January 1st, and it's a little limited. I think it's not going to be... You won't be able to do it with an app. I think you'll have to start at a casino.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's coming, and it's going to ruin sports for all of us.
How do you mean by that?
Because all your reports, how much now when you talk about sports do you talk about things to bet on?
Yeah, well, I have been with Sam lately. Yeah. That's out of my... zone.
But I don't care about that. I care about how much the Cubs are going to lose by.
I was listening to a radio show over the weekend on a sports station, and it was late at night. I was just dialing around, and I didn't understand a word they were saying because it was a fantasy sports radio show. And people were calling in from all around the planet, and they were going, I got Smith versus Jones wide out. They go, Jones, next call. It was just like that for an hour. And it was all because of fantasy sports, which I believe is wagering or a kind of gambling, right?
If you have money on it.
Yeah, well, I guess, right. That's how you get in those pools. Noah Hirsch is the assistant general manager at the Caesars facility in, is it Hammond, Noah? How are you? Welcome to the show.
Great. Thanks for having me on. Yes, Horseshoe in Hammond, Indiana.
Yeah. What do you think about this little conversation we're having here, sir?
So I think if you do not enjoy gambling on sports, it seems like you might be in a minority right now, because we opened our sports book September 4th, and it has exceeded our expectations. The number of folks that come in every single day to bet on sports and have come back because they like that experience has been overwhelming.
What was it like the first day you opened?
So we opened at 11 a.m. We had a few honored members there, the executive director of the Indiana Gaming Commission, the mayor of Hammond, who placed the first wager, Matt Forte from the Bears. We opened at 11 a.m. We pulled the stanchions up at about 11:10 a.m., and we had nearly 50 folks jump in line to place a wager, and we've had folks nonstop since then.
Well, the Colts aren't playing today, but the Bears are tonight. What do you expect as far as crowds are concerned?
We're expecting a full house tonight.
What does that mean? So I don't have to be there to place. I mean, I can place a bet, but they don't have to stay there, right? I mean, why would people be at your place just to watch the game and have the whole gambling experience, huh?
Yeah, so what we've done is we've put together what we believe to be the premier sports book in the entire region. So in addition to seating for nearly 100, we have plush recliner chairs that you've seen all over the sports book in Las Vegas. We have VIP couch sections where you can come with a group of friends. We have a bar right at that location. And then we have 16 85-inch TVs that either can be on 16 different games, or we can pair four of those together and make giant screens. And so it's just part of the entire experience. So you can place your wager, and then you have 1 year to collect your winnings. If you win that bet, you don't have to stay at the casino. But what we're seeing is people really enjoy the experience that we have, the food options that we have, and so folks are sticking around to watch the games.
So tell us a little bit about that race, though. I mean, it is coming to Illinois. Indiana has it first. Are you hoping then to indoctrinate us Illinoisans into coming over there, and you're going to keep us as clients, or do you suspect that once it's legal in Illinois, you're going to drop off a little bit?
Yeah, so we believe that we have the best offering, and we'll continue to have the best offering even once sports betting is legalized in Illinois. And so as folks come and they experience everything that we have to offer, we expect to keep a significant number of those guests coming back.
I wonder, as a consumer, what are you going to do? Because it's the same bet. So are you going to give me a better deal on the stakes? Is it the drinks? I mean, how do you keep people on your side of the line?
Yeah, so there's a few different ways. And first of all, having guests come from all over, even coming past other casinos in the region, is nothing new to us. So we're part of Caesars Entertainment. That's over 40 casinos in the country. As you bet with us, whether that's on sports, whether that's on table games, whether that's World Series of Poker, or whether that's slots, you earn rewards and points and offers that you can redeem either at our facility or at our 40 other facilities. So whether that's Harrah's New Orleans and you want to go down and experience all the fun that you can have in New Orleans, Las Vegas, Atlantic City, Lake Tahoe, no one else can offer what we offer in that regard.
Somebody told me, could you compare the traffic you're getting? Because you got 7 million people right around the bend there in a state that they can't bet in. So lucky you, right? It seemed to me like you would just be such a magnet for that. Can you compare or contrast how you guys are doing relative to places in Las Vegas or, I don't know, New Jersey or wherever else they have these things? Can you talk about how much money you're taking in compared to those places?
Yeah, we're seeing significant action at this point. Part of it is just the pent-up demand of folks that have never been able to bet on sports and now are able to. And so we are experiencing great volumes, similar to Caesars Palace in Las Vegas, which is known for being one of the premier sports books in the entire country.
More or less, are you making more money or less than Caesars in Vegas?
It's not quite at that Caesars level. Caesars Palace is really the pinnacle for the country and for our company.
So not there yet. Somebody told me you guys were right there, that you are like making that kind of money.
So we are seeing increased demand for two reasons. One, we're still really new. So we've been open now for, 19 days. We opened September 4th. So it takes a little bit of time for that momentum to build, the word of mouth to get around, and for folks to experience, see, feel all the great stuff that we have going on. You asked what other reasons someone might come. In addition to placing that bet, we have promotions every single week through the entire football season. It's called a $1 million pick'em, where if you guess the right team, and that's completely free to enter, there's weekly prizes. We have a $50,000 finale drawing January 4th. Those are all the different things that really set us apart from other casinos, but other forms of entertainment as well.
I don't know anything about this stuff, Noah. So if I was there today, I could bet on the football game tonight, right? The Bears and Redskins? Noah? Don't leave me now. Sounded like he disconnected, but now it sounds like he's still there. Hey, Noah, can you hear me? Yeah. I think we lost him. I'll hang up. You go ahead and get him back on the line one more time. Just finish this conversation. Because I was just about to ask him, okay, I can bet on the game tonight. But then I wonder if they have, what do they call them, prop bets? All of those other things that you can bet on. And I'm kind of intrigued by all of this. But I'm not a player, just because I know what I don't know. Is Noah still on the line? Okay, we'll reach back out to him then. Noah Hirsch. There you are, Noah. You're back on WGN. So I could bet on the game tonight, right? And what would I bet on? Like, is a bet who's going to win? But I got to cover the spread, and it's 5.5 points or something like that?
Yeah, there are three different of the most popular bets are betting on one team in the spread. Right. And so whatever that spread might be, those are the number of points that you either have to give or that you receive as an underdog or a favorite. So that's one of the most popular bets. A second popular bet is called the over-under bet, and that is what you take both teams, their final score, and you bet either the over, which means the number that's given, you think the score is going to be higher when you combine both team scores, or you think it's going to be lower. And then the third is called a money line bet, where you take the spread completely out of it. You just bet on one of the two teams that you think are going to win.
I like that.
And then you might win and for that money line bet, you might win a little more if you bet on the underdog, and you might win a little less if you're betting on the favorite. Those are really the three most popular bets.
Do you do some of the silly ones, like, you know, is the field goal kicker going to scratch his ear 6 times or something like that?
Yeah, there's some prop. They're called prop bets that we offer for different sports and different games. As we move along, we'll be opening up some more of those bets. The Super Bowl is really known for being the king of proposition bets. So whether it's how long the national anthem is going to be sung for and things of that nature.
Is there any limit to how much money I can spend or lose there?
There is a limit on the amount of money that you can win per bet. So if you are not a card holder, and it differs a little bit by game and by bet type, but we'll allow a wager where you can win $20,000 back.
Oh, really? But then after that, no. So whatever the wager is, you won't take any more of my money. If I win, I get more than $20,000.
Well, so if you let's say you place a wager on the Bears tonight, and you the ticket would win $20,000, we'll let you go through with that. If you want to place a different, separate bet for an upcoming college or pro football game this weekend, then you can make another wager with that $20,000 max payout.
What are the top things that people are wagering on? NFL, like the Bears would be number one. Was the Michigan game or the Notre Dame game the next one? Can you categorize those for me?
Yeah, so pro football is king. The majority of our action and the action in the country is on NFL. After that, we've seen a lot of action on college football as well as on Major League Baseball.
And is there a game, though, that you can point to that got the most wagering going on?
Not from this past weekend. Obviously, the Bears are each week have been a significant game that's been wagered on. That opening night, so when we open September 4th, 36 hours later, the Packers played the Bears, and so the fanfare for that was electric.
Noah Hirsch is the, give me your title again, assistant general manager or assistant manager over there?
Assistant general manager at Horseshoe Hammond, that's correct.
Yeah, good to talk to you. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you, John.
Yeah. Thank you, Steve.
Happiness when all I needed was a little peace. Try gotta get back to what we need.
It's 2:34 on WGN. What are you playing for us here, producer Elif?
I am playing Marina. She's going to be playing the Byline Bank Aragon Ballroom tonight. Tickets are still available, and they start at $37 through the Aragon Ballroom website. And it's also the first day of fall, so although she's talking about actual orange trees probably in this song, you're going to see a lot of orange-colored trees soon.
Yes.
And she's my idol.
You look a little like her, don't you?
That's what everyone says.
I don't know her music, but what you've been playing for me today and in the past I like. What's her name again?
Marina.
Marina, that's it? She just goes by Marina?
Used to be Marina and the Diamonds.
Ah.
She just cut off that last part.
I could never replicate the feeling that I get beneath my feet.
2:35, WGN. So the president is being accused by Democrats, and it's being reported in the media that maybe on a phone call to the leader of the Ukraine, he was discussing getting some dirt on Joe Biden and his son, specifically his son. The president said, no, it's the other way around. Biden's the one that should be investigated because he actually tried to intervene on behalf of his son over there. So it's this back and forth, back and forth. And I don't mean to trivialize it. I'm bringing it up for a reason. But just think about this. If the president was, in fact, on the phone with a foreign leader, maybe the president of the Ukraine, and he was asking a foreign government to investigate a political opponent or a political opponent's son, then is that okay? Look, all of the rules are out the window these days. So I'm more interested in, is this constitutional or is this legal? We called Dave Schultz, constitutional law professor who's joined us before to answer a couple of questions. Hey, Dave, this is John. You're back on the air. How are you, my friend?
I am doing exceedingly well. And how are you doing, okay?
Really good. Let's jump right into that, Dave. Is what the president's being accused of legal?
Well, it's divided out in two ways. Is it constitutional versus legal? Okay. There. First off, he would not be the first person in office or running for office to do opposition research. That happens all the time. Now, the question becomes, given the fact that he is apparently encouraging a foreign government to maybe investigate his political opposition, does that raise particular legal questions? So in general, opposition research, not illegal, not unconstitutional, no problem with that. But here, there are two possibilities in terms of sort of legal issues. One of them is if, in fact, he's inviting a foreign government to try to interfere with U.S. elections. There is a federal law that makes it illegal for foreign governments to try to interfere with U.S. elections. If, in fact, he's inviting, let's say, Ukraine to do that, to investigate one of his political opponents, the president is now what? He is formally, in this case, colluding or aiding and abetting a foreign government to break U.S. law. That's a problem. The other, and this is where the Democrats are challenged now, could one argue that encouraging a foreign government to interfere with U.S. elections is a high crime and misdemeanor and therefore an impeachable offense? And I think that is among the questions that the Democrats in the House of Representatives have to address. And so that would be potentially the constitutional issue.
I don't know what a high crime is, though. Is that a figurative statement or is that a literal statement?
Well, the phrase high crimes and misdemeanors, we lifted from, like many things we did, we wrote our Constitution from the British. And the British, when they used the word high crimes and misdemeanors, they weren't just thinking of what we would think of real crimes. They had in mind, for example, maladministration or misadministration. Basically, when the British used the term, it was saying that high crimes and misdemeanors was a political judgment by Parliament regarding whether or not a person was fit to stay in office. And I mention that here because it really would force the Democrats to ask the question, is a president of the United States who invites a foreign government to try to interfere in U.S. elections or to try to investigate a political opponent, is that something that rises level to a level that one would consider to be a high crime and misdemeanor that's inappropriate for the President of the United States to do?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. Do you?
And that's no. The simple answer is, what does Congress, both the House and the Senate, reach in terms of conclusion? I mean, it's a tough question here. Now, if I change it from Constitution to law to ethics, I get yet another answer. Ethically, what do I think about the idea of a sitting president encouraging a foreign government to investigate his political opponent? I have real problems with that, in the sense that I would hope that most of us as Americans would say, these are our elections, we defend our elections, and we should be doing the best to keep foreign governments from sticking their nose in our business.
Sounded like the president was looking for information that would harm Joe Biden because of a favor that they asked the president there to do, which would be get rid of a prosecutor who might have been pursuing Biden's son.
Correct.
Okay, so I don't know if that's fair game or not, but I just want to play the devil's advocate for a second. If in a conversation with a foreign leader, say the president of the Ukraine, the president of the United States was able to get information on a political opponent, and that political opponent was doing something wrong, then I wonder if we care about the source of that. That is, the president says to the leader of the Ukraine or Russia or any other country, Australia, maybe an ally, hey, do you know that this politician is doing something unethical or illegal? If so, please share it with me.
So that
in that light, it doesn't seem so bad, does it?
Correct. But there are appropriate channels for how that is done. Let us say that's exactly the scenario you're describing here. This may be a request that comes from what? One of the prosecutors, from the Justice Department, or what you might say is that if in fact you really did suspect that your political opponent was doing something really serious, illegal, this is where in the old days we might set up things like what? Special prosecutors, a special counsel, or you might hire somebody on the outside so that you would remove the appearance of impropriety that it was being done for political retaliation. And that would be pretty standard way to handle things, or should be a pretty standard way to handle things, because at some point, it's not just about is something improper, but does it have the appearance of impropriety?
By the way, a couple of you pointed this out. Thank you for that. I'm well aware of this. I didn't mention it. John, it's not just the Democrats that are accusing Trump. It is a whistleblower that works in the Trump administration. To my knowledge, we still don't know much about this person or even exactly what is in that whistleblower's, you know, accusation or report. It's not been shared with the Congress. It sure hasn't been shared with us yet, but it was a whistleblower. The president said, well, it's partisan, but I don't know that we know the nature of the whistleblower, and I don't know that that should matter. If they are listening in on a conversation and they find something that they think is inappropriate, then I don't see the harm in kicking that upstairs and having it investigated. What are your thoughts about that, Dave?
Yeah, absolutely correct. In fact, I think if I remember correctly, the president has also said he doesn't really know who the whistleblower is, too.
He said both. He said both. I don't know who it is, but this is clearly partisan, which...
That's right. So, which is kind of an odd, because if you don't know who it is, I don't know how do you know if that person is being partisan or not. So, you know, but there's a little confusion here. But yes, there's nothing inappropriate in saying that that the whistleblower has filed a legitimate complaint, you know, under federal law, because we're concerned about what? Perhaps bribery, corruption, who knows, whatever it is, and it should be investigated appropriately. And Congress does also have, under the Constitution, oversight and investigatory powers that have been upheld by the Supreme Court. And so is it legitimate for them to look into this issue when we have somebody as a whistleblower who has filed a complaint? Probably is.
The direction this is going now is that maybe it's the tipping point. This will be enough for the House to finally decide they want to impeach the president, which would be ironic to me because this sounds a little wonky. We still don't know the details. We've got all of the big picture things like Hillary Clinton and the Mueller report and collusion and obstruction and the election. You can't get them on that. But then a phone call to the president of the Ukraine is what's finally going to push you over the edge. I wonder if there's enough there, you know. I wonder if that's actually going to get the president impeached.
And I think that's the, you know, that's the $50,000 question of which none of us know the answer to, because unless by some reason that whistleblower complaint has landed on your desk and I haven't seen it, none of us know. We're all speculating. I think every newspaper in the country, you know, every news station in the country is speculating on this, and none of us really know what it says.
Anything else I should be asking you or we should know about this then? And if I may, though, Dave, just to be clear, I think one of the things you said early in this conversation is especially important to our understanding of it, and that is high crimes and misdemeanors, which is more, if we put it in context of what the Founding Fathers meant, is it just a kind of behavior that we think is inappropriate for that office? I know that impeachment is a political process. I could impeach you because I don't like the color of your hair. I won't get in a conviction. But that notion that it needs to rise to the level of high crimes and misdemeanors is inherently subjective, isn't it?
Right. And for good or for bad, we leave the subjective determination of that to whom? To our elected representatives. You know, we'll leave that to the House of Representatives for impeachment and to the U.S. Senate for determination of conviction. And at some point, it's supposed to be the process that decides, you know, ultimately, is the president fit to stay in office? Keep in mind, of course, people forget about this, that ultimately, if the Electoral College were deadlocked in terms of picking the president of the United States, who finally picks the president of the United States? It's Congress. So in many ways, Congress holds the final check over who's selected president and whether a president stays in office.
By the way, speaking of our elected officials, Mitch McConnell is going to address this momentarily. Maybe we'll listen in on that. Maybe we won't. But Mitch McConnell will be speaking about this soon. Be interesting to see if he actually turns on the president, because he's generally got his back. Anything else I should plug for you, my friend, Dave Schultz? You got a book coming out?
I'm working on a variety of things. One of them right now is a new book on generational politics, which looks at how politics changes across generations. And so as the baby boomers are exiting and the Gen X's are exiting, how might the millennials and now the Gen Z's, how might they redo the world over the next few years? And so that book's in process now.
Well, if it's not done by this Thanksgiving, make sure you have your publisher push it out next Thanksgiving, because I think a lot of people need to be armed with that kind of information when they're all gathering around multi-generation, you know?
I do too.
Nice to talk to you, Dave. We always appreciate your expertise.
Anytime. Have a good day.
Constitutional law professor Dave Schultz. Speaking of the holidays, Ella, if I'm going to read the setup for the clip, then you're going to play that segment from Succession. I don't know if you watch that show, but I think I can do it justice for you. It won an Emmy for outstanding writing for a drama series last night, by the way. And they've renewed the show for a third season. This is a clip from last night's episode. There's no spoiler here. But as we are now into the fall, and you'll be doing things like planning family get-togethers and negotiating for hosting rights at Christmas, I thought if you thought your family struggled during the holidays with this stuff, you haven't been to the Roys. They're the billionaire family that runs a media empire, and maybe something like Disney World or Six Flags, too. So imagine a family, and they own the Fox television network and theme parks and websites. The patriarch is a billionaire, Logan Roy. He's divorced. At the next board meeting, he needs his bitter ex-wife to vote with the family to save the company. And it is quite possible, to spite him, that she won't vote with the family. To persuade her to accommodate him, he sends her largely estranged children to see her in London to make a deal. He says, offer her $10 million for her vote. In fact, he tells his son he'd go to $50 million for her vote, but start at 10. He didn't want to pay any more than 10, but he'd go to 50. In fact, he says, any amount the son can save under $50 million, the father will split the difference with the son. So the scene goes like this.
Thank you for coming, Dad.
Yeah, well, just following orders.
I cannot see.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, right.
Shall we begin with the negotiations straight away? Tell me, what does it feel like being sent here to wheedle out your mother?
If you want to get into it, you're just posturing, right? And if you go with Sandy and Stewie, you're burning down the Coliseum with your children inside it.
I've thought about it.
Dad is willing to reopen the divorce settlement.
So what's the number?
Well, he told me to tell you 10, but it's 40.
So it's 50.
No, it's 40.
Roman, you're not very good at this. I know what I'd like. Tell him the Summer Palace. The Hamptons house.
You hate it out there.
No, but he loves it, doesn't he?
What is that? It's like 150 million.
Or, how about 20 million? And you kids give me Christmas every year.
Oh, come on. Mom, don't make it like... I would like to come for Christmas.
Sure.
No, you never invite us.
Well, it's because you made it quite clear you wouldn't come.
That was one time.
That was several times.
I was 18.
Look, I would like to see you for Christmas. Instead of you always being with your father. Why don't you ask him what he'd rather? He can keep the Summer Palace if I get the family every Christmas. So I think we have to hear which he'd prefer. Let's make him choose.
Ouch. Lauren, $150 million or Christmas, pick one.
Money. Sorry.
Yeah, I think $150 million and I'll get you whatever you want next year.
Yeah, exactly. I'll make it up to you eventually.
But you get the feeling, too, this husband and wife now divorced are so bitter. There's such animosity in the family at all levels that that would be a sticking point. He says, no, I know, because he knows that she wants the kids, so he's not going to accommodate her and she's not going to accommodate him.
Yeah, it's amazing what, you know, some spitefulness can do to a person.
I know, and then you just throw in the holidays. And this is a family that... A warm, cheery Christmas is beyond their scope, so I'm not exactly sure what this is all about anyway. But if, for instance, I don't get the feeling she really, I guess maybe she wants to spend the time with the kids, but they don't. None of them act like they especially like each other anyway. You know, they've got these old wounds. That's when I was 18. I didn't want to do anything when I was 18. You always spend Christmas with your father. All right, so tell him that I'll just take $20 million, but I get you kids for Christmas. And then he's going to realize she really wants the kids for Christmas. Then maybe he doesn't do that. So then she says, okay, fine. You want my vote? Then give me the $150 million Hamptons estate, which he loves and she hates, but she'll take that just to make him miserable because now she has it.
That's not even like a first world problem. That's just, I don't even know what to call that.
Really? First world problem. Who hasn't been there? Who among us in the suburbs haven't had that very conversation? It's like that's kind of the joy of that thing. I'm thinking, okay, I know it's kind of a hassle during the holidays. Are we going to go to your place again or my mom's place or whatever the deal is? But really, it's not that bad.
Yeah, life of the elite world problems is probably more accurate.
That's a half the world problem. It's 2:56 on WGN. Lots of texts about this and also about what Dave Schultz was talking about. We'll ask him to follow up on that conversation about the charges against the president later this week. It's 2:56. We'll head into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, check on the stories that matter, say hello to Ro and Anna. That's all coming up.